It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. This morning, we'll visit a factory that's employed generations of West Virginia glassblowers.
I do not know what the glory hole is, but it has to be over 2,000 degrees. It's hot.
More about Blinko Glass just ahead. Stay with us. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A federal appeals court has denied a request to rehear a case concerning the Atlantic Coast Pipeline's permits to cross two national forests, including parts of the Appalachian Trail. As Brittany Patterson reports, the latest decision leaves limited options for the multi-billion dollar natural gas pipeline.
On Monday, the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals declined pipeline developer Dominion Energy's request for the case to be reheard in front of the full court. Pipeline developers wanted the full court to reconsider a ruling made last year. In December, a three-judge panel of the 4th Circuit found that the U.S. Forest Service failed to protect federal land when it originally issued approvals to the Atlantic Coast Pipeline to cross the George Washington National Forest, the Monongahela National Forest, and the Appalachian Trail. The court's decision not to rehear the case is another blow to the 600-mile interstate natural gas pipeline that is set to run from West Virginia to eastern North Carolina. Construction is currently halted along its entire route. Environmental groups hailed the Fourth Circuit's decision not to rehear the case as a win. A spokesperson for Dominion Energy said the company remains confident the pipeline will be completed despite the project's ballooning costs. In a statement, they said Dominion intends to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court within 90 days and will pursue legislative options. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brittany Patterson.
Governor Jim Justice's bill to give a 5% pay raise for teachers, state employees, and state police passed the West Virginia House of Delegates last week, but it's not yet been taken up by the Senate. On last night's episode of the Legislature Today, host Suzanne Higgins spoke with Senate President Mitch Carmichael and Senate Minority Leader Roman Prezioso about the bill. Here's an excerpt from that interview.
The salary bill that is still existing, still alive, is 2730. It's over where and what will it run? What will we see?
Well, there's a couple components to that bill. You're talking about
it
includes
bill,
the pay raise bills for teachers, state employees, and state police. Mm-hmm. So within the bills that have already passed the Senate, we passed a state police pay raise.
And that
bill
was 554 yesterday.
Right, and which actually provides more of a pay raise than what was sent over from the House. So, and then as it relates to the teacher pay raise bill, we're continuing to evaluate our options there. We're very intent on focusing, and this is where my good friend and I probably have some slight disagreement with this, is that we're continuing to focus on student achievement, parental options, and improving the school system in our state. We trust and believe in our teachers, parents, and students, and we want to do all that we can to improve their level of achievement. So we are hesitant, but not completely ruling out the option of simply just paying more in the current system without changing it. So that'll shake out over the next couple of weeks.
I'm sorry, just the bottom line, you're not definitively saying that the teachers are gonna get a pay raise.
Oh, I'm definitively saying a teacher pay raise has already been voted on twice in the state Senate, and B, I want to provide them with a teacher pay raise. Absolutely, it's a component of comprehensive education reform. It's a vital component of that. However, there are other elements of it that are very important to the people of West Virginia, to our caucus, that we believe must be incorporated into a simple pay raise bill.
All right, so 2730 remains where it remains right now,
right,
in finance.
Right. No, it's in education.
Education.
Yeah.
All right. So, Senator, your comments on that?
Well, here was the thing. When the session began, there was a real big optimism that we would work together, and you picked a great majority leader, and you know we would start to have dialogue, and we were really enthusiastic. But you know, as the education bill was formulated around that pay raise, We just didn't feel that the input from the stakeholders and the legislators, you know, had any part in it. The promise was made right before the election that we would give a pay raise to teachers. We thought that was an issue that should be out of the road. The components of the education bill, you know, we'd love to discuss them. We haven't been part of that discussion. We think they should be discussed individually and live on their own merit. And that's the only difference, I think, that the President and I would have over the education bill.
Yeah.
Senator, you know there will be plenty of people that say that is punitive.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate that someone would believe a pay raise is punitive.
No, that it's not being moved on. The 2730 is not being passed for a pay raise in and of itself.
Yeah, and well, we have never been completely bought in on the concept of a simple pay raise with no education reform. And furthermore, we're disappointed. We're very disappointed that union leaders, teacher union leaders, called for another illegal strike and walked out for 2 days. Now, that doesn't prevent us from doing a pay raise. We're going to continue to evaluate that in the context of a silo. That's a siloed component of comprehensive education reform. I think the people of West Virginia realize, all of us realize, that this current environment in which we're trying to perform student achievement is not achieving the desired results. The testing results demonstrate we're near last. Now, how does anyone defend that? How do you defend that component of our education achievement initiatives? You can't. It cannot be defended. So we must incorporate some change into the system. Paying our teachers more is a vital component of that, but it's not the sole solution.
Okay, I'm going to give Senator
sure.
Prezioso one more closing remark on that.
We're not at the bottom. I think we rank over on education probably in the middle, about 34 or so. There are components in education that need to be addressed. And I think they were some of the components that the leadership brought forth in that bill were admirable. You know, we have to put more resources in where the problems lie in the fact of school counselors, psychologists, in the peripheral agencies that work with education. And we were onto something there. But there were poison pills within that bill, that a non-severability clause. The first time that I've ever seen that in 30 years, you know, take all or none. We were actually giving the Supreme Court the ability to legislate when you do that. If someone would have brought forth an issue that was not constitutional or wasn't according to law, you know, the courts could strike it down and subsequently strike the teacher pay raise down. So that was some of the problems that were evolved around that education bill. I think if everyone sat down, all the stakeholders and legislators and students, parents, everyone involved, and worked towards, you know, we keep saying education reform, that's sort of a misnomer. Education is an evolving product that you got to work on continually. And I think there's room for discussion, but we want the doors open to have that discussion with the leadership and with the stakeholders.
Again, that was Senate Minority Leader Roman Prezioso and Senate President Mitch Carmichael speaking with Suzanne Higgins on the legislature today. Visit our website, wvpublic.org, to hear the full interview. Transportation and fuel provided the foundation of a large glass industry in central Appalachia at the beginning of the 19th century. Changes to the industry nearly destroyed it. But Blanco Glass in Milton, West Virginia, continues to adapt and keeps making glass by hand. Eric Douglas visited the Blanco Glass factory to get the story.
Approaching the slightly rundown, ragtag collection of metal and cinder block buildings that make up Blanco Glass, you might not expect to find much inside. Instead, approximately 20 workers make glass vases and water bottles that will soon be shipped to stores across the country and the world. The roar of natural gas in the glass furnaces is nearly overwhelming. Looking directly into the hottest, brightest part of the furnace, called the glory hole, is an incredible sight.
I do not know what the glory hole is, but it has to be over 2,000 degrees. It's hot. And nobody can see my arm. It's red today. You know, it gets red, but it goes away after a while.
That's Charlie Chafin, one of the glass workers at Blanco Glass. The factory floor was once the exclusive domain of experienced glass workers. Now, Blinko brings the public into the workshop to inspire a new generation of collectors. On a recent weekend, more than 200 people registered weeks in advance to get a chance to blow their own glass water bottles. It was the first time Caitlin Jordan got a behind-the-scenes look at the facility.
I was really interested by the furnaces, oddly enough, to see the actual furnaces. They're just authentic. You know, I didn't know that you actually, blew glass, that you blew into it to expand it.
The art of making glass is nothing new for West Virginians. In fact, the glass industry was once booming across the state, says Dean Six, the vice president and general manager at Blinko Glass.
When the glass industry first came here, it was in what was then Charlestown, West Virginia, which became Wellsburg in Brook County, way up in the northern panhandle, beyond Wheeling. That's 1813. So that's the first glass factory in the state.
He says the most expensive part of making glass is the fuel needed to produce it.
By the 1890s, and starting a little before that, we discovered natural gas in West Virginia. And that really booms the glass industry because you have a much more affordable, much cleaner, much more portable fuel source.
To make glass, you also need a way to transport products and plenty of raw materials. West Virginia has both, with its many rivers and high-quality silica sand. Workers from Pittsburgh came to work the glass industry in West Virginia.
And Pittsburgh is glass central in the early, certainly the early 19th century, early 1800s. You just start stealing glassware. Then you just bring down the river and back into the States. So you got to have that skill set, and that's critical. And then we get that seed, that germination in the northern panhandle from Wheeling, originally from Pittsburgh, and then just kind of drifts.
Over the years, there have been hundreds of glass manufacturers in the state. But today, there are just a few glass factories left.
There's Marble King in Payton City. Also in Payton City is Wismock. They've been there since 1903, and they make flat glass similar to what we do, but they use a mechanized rolling process. So they're making and shipping all over the world for architects, stained glass windows, crafts.
There's also Davis Glass in Morgantown, which produces glass for lamps. Several individual artisans like Hinkle Glass in Upshur County operate in the state as well. But keeping a glass business afloat these days isn't easy. Blinko Glass went through bankruptcy more than a decade ago. One thing that helped them recover and thrive was doing more outreach events. Today, they have 10 activities a year that target potential glass enthusiasts. And that leads to a one-of-a-kind experience for participants like Caitlin Jordan.
It's a well-known glass company, and I've always been interested in glass blowing. It's just always intrigued me. It was exciting. It was fulfilling, and you know, I feel like I made a one-of-a-kind Caitlin Jordan original. I think, honestly, my favorite memory of the day was standing by the furnace watching Mom do it. Go in there and do that first, just with the anticipation that I was about to.
Getting new customers to see the process of glassmaking with their own eyes is the key to the company's survival, says Charlie Chafin, a glass worker who has been with Blinko 23 years.
These are one of the best days you can have. When you got people you don't know, or some people you do know, being here two or three times, it's pretty cool. It's one of the best things. I love it.
Through online sales and community outreach efforts, Blinko is in the best shape they've been in for years. General Manager Dean Six reports they plan to continue making glass well into the future. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Eric Douglas.
That was Eric Douglas at the Blinko Glass Factory in Milton, West Virginia. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.